Thank you. Following the loss of the Haines-based Alaska State Trooper, should the borough pursue a police service area expansion? If so, how should it be funded? If not, what should the borough do to address police protection for borough residents outside the town site? If you need any of that repeated, just let me know. Let's start with Brenda.
Thank you for the question. I believe that services, expansion of services, should be at the request of the residents. I think that the first thing we need to do is clarify the trooper's jurisdiction. It is my understanding the troopers have maintained jurisdiction. It is their jurisdiction unless it is given up because the Haynesboro accepts that obligation. Additionally, the expansion into the different service areas, I believe, need to come up on a vote of each service area individually. I was very disappointed when it was brought out, the ordinance was put forward for a vote in the October election to be a borough-wide vote. It's a disadvantage to the people living in the service area, which are a minority of the votes.
So do you think that the local police should continue to respond to emergencies outside of the town site when the troopers are not able to respond?
I believe that the emergencies should be responded by contacting dispatch for the troopers and then taking direction from the troopers. There was a comment made by a gentleman from out the road. He said, what we need is we need someone to do paperwork and follow up on the incidents. We're so far out that it's not going to thwart a crime that happens. And so I believe that the jurisdiction at this point is trooper. I believe the call should go to the trooper and it should be at the trooper's direction how it's followed up on.
Thank you. Sean?
Yes, so this is an interesting subject because when I first was, this was first brought to my attention, I had assumed after talking to many residents out the road and out the service areas that they wanted the same service that they've always been getting. So I just assumed that it was just a matter of bargaining how much they were willing to pay for it. So that's what I said as my first statement towards this in an assembly meeting. And immediately, I heard literal outcries from the audience. After that, I reached out to people. I've talked to people on the phone. I've talked to people in person and found out that that was absolutely not the case, that they want the same service they've been getting and they feel that they've already been paying for it through property taxes and through sales tax. And if it was a matter of having more service or having to pay for any service, they would rather not. So my immediate response has always been to establish whose jurisdiction it is. Right now, it's the troopers. They tried to offer us $25,000 worth of a slap in the face to take over that jurisdiction, and then they basically are strong-arming us by saying, well, you're on your own anyway. I've always proposed, well, after realizing my mistake, that we need to just keep doing what we've been doing, which is the troopers respond to the calls. It should not be going from the person out 33 Mile to Ketchikan to Juneau to Haines. It should be going from the troopers to Haines. And just like we've always had this mutual aid agreement, if they need our help, we are always going to do that. And I think that would satisfy the police because they have that ethical responsibility to show up. And they're probably going to show up. And as long as they get the clearance from the troopers whose jurisdiction it is, then that's just fine with me because the people out the roads are already paying for it and they're done paying. Thank you.
Andrew?
I do believe that we should respond to emergency calls outside of the town site. And thankfully for one, they don't happen very often. It's very minor. It's a couple a year, if anything, for ones that the police could actually make a difference in responding to. But I think the sad truth is we are on our own. The troopers are, by and large, not going to make any legitimate difference in resolving major crimes out there. It's going to fall to us. And if there is any true emergencies, I doubt we could stop our Haynesboro police from responding to it. So I think we should fund that and pursue that. And it's not, I don't believe this should be a matter where we think of ourselves in divided geographical regions. Just because you live out the road, I don't think it's their sole choice, because if I got plastered and decided I wanted to drive to Chilkoot Lake, because I heard the Silvers were running, I imagine everybody in this room would want me pulled over by the troopers, even though I go past the townsite district. Similarly, if there's a meth lab that gets set out up the highway, that affects all of us. It's not just geographically boundary. It's not as constrained as that, I don't think. And so thankfully, we don't need much police response outside the town site, but I think we should do it and do it as an entire borough district.
So just to clarify, you would support an expanded police service area?
I'm open to it. But again, it's really going to come down to the people's vote. I think this is one that should go to the people's vote, though, honestly.
Michael.
Thank you. Let me qualify this, first of all, by saying that I am an employee of the Department of Public Safety. I do work with the troopers on a seasonal basis. I feel strongly about this in that, first of all, the troopers did abandon the people out the road. I'm also a member of the Public Safety Commission. And in response to that, the police department began to respond to emergency calls and other calls out there. And we started a listening campaign to figure out what exactly people wanted. And there's a lot of ill will that's born from the consolidation around money. But what was very clear in those meetings was when someone called 911, they wanted people to start moving in their direction. There was no hesitation about who was paying for it or what bureaucracy had to happen or get into gear. They wanted help to come. And I think it's our moral obligation as a community, extended members of our family, if you will, that we provide that help. So I am in favor of an expanded service area. I do think it's our moral obligation to do that.
Diana?
We're a unified borough. We're not a town site. We're a town site and Upper Highway, LUTAC, Mud Bay, but we're a unified borough. If something goes wrong up the highway and we do not have a trooper here that we had a year ago, our police department will respond by way of the call going through Ketchikan and Ketchikan dispatching it to the Haines Police Department. That's the process that's in place right now until we can come to a better process or something better. At the assembly meeting on the 26th of September, if I'm not mistaken, this issue will be brought up. And when we were up at Mosquito Lake, we told the folks up there how critical their voice needs to be heard to this assembly. I think the assembly is approaching it the right way. They're not going in with knee-jerk reactions or guns blazing or any of the above. They're taking, let's see how many calls are dispatched out, what type of calls they are. It's kind of not a wait and see, but it's kind of a gathering information. And then I believe I would like to see some kind of police enforcement only for the well-being and the security for the people in the upper highway. I know I like to be able, I live on Allen Road. I like to know that I can call 911 at any given moment and have a police officer there. And once you have those services, it's nice to have fire, ambulance. The other thing I had brought up at a meeting here just recently about all this is how is the property tax allocated? The manager told me in round figures, X amount goes to the school. Well, that really didn't tell me anything. That doesn't tell me the breakdown of per household up the highway, how much of their property tax is actually going to police services. So there's information out there that we need to know, that we need to gather, and I don't believe we have a high crime rate out there, but I think the assembly is moving in the forward direction that it needs to concerning this.
Thank you. Okay, the next question is about the LUTAC doc. Do you think the borough should set its sights to the least expensive $21 million LUTAC doc replacement option? And should the borough bond for the renovation or replacement of the dock? We'll start with Michael.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not entirely certain what the best course of action is at this point. I haven't dug into the details of this as deeply as I would have liked. I do know there are monies available now that the road from Juneau has been abandoned. We should desperately attempt to attack those monies. I would like to see a reasonable plan be put into motion as soon as possible, so that we are not forced to act in the case of an emergency failure of the dock. That we have a plan in place that we can rely on to maintain. I think the roll on roll off is probably the best solution for that in the short term. I would like ultimately to see the larger complex develop, because I think it's important to the future economic development of our town side. I believe strongly in business. I believe strongly in economic development. I think we need to create the foundation, the framework for businesses to grow. And having a dock where you can stage produce and product for shipment both from and to is terribly important to this community, so that we do need to pursue the larger option, but we do need to have plan B, if you will, in place, and we need to move on that just as soon as possible so that we have the means to maintain our community should a failure happen. Thank you.
Do you think the borough should bond for the renovation or replacement?
Yes, I do. If necessary, communities have been bonding now for many, many years successfully. That would be a solution, because we need that. That being said, I would hope that, given our wonderful staff on the borough, we have some fantastic writers and some very creative thinkers there. There are monies available both federally and locally that we should be looking to try to fund this dock, and we should leave no leaf unturned to find these monies and do so just as aggressively as possible. This has to be, I think, our top priority.
Andrew.
I wouldn't pursue the scale down option unless we absolutely had to, if we were completely over the barrel, which I don't think we are yet. We're still early in exploring those avenues of funding. And as far as bonding goes, that's the absolute last step on the list, I would think. And I think bonding would really, I can only see that really happening if we did have kind of the emergency catastrophic failure and just had to get it going practically immediately. But bonds have to get it approved by the voters, not the assembly necessarily, I thought. So it's, I'm not a big fan of it, but I would see that as the last, an option of last resort, and that's all.
Brenda.
The $37 million conceptual design for the LUTAC dock was accepted through a public process. There were public hearings. The options were presented. It went through the Ports and Harbor Committee. It went through the Planning Commission. It was the recommendation from both the Ports and Harbors, the Planning Commission, the Assembly accepted that dock. There were four main conceptions. One was around $60 million, another one around $25 million, another one around $21 million. $37 million was not the largest, most expensive. All the public, Ports and Harbors Planning Commission, in unison, agreed that that was the right design for our community. The change in design came from staff. It was a staff recommendation because of the belief that the funding would be too difficult to get. My understanding is there was one grant application that was submitted and it was rejected, and the response immediately was, well, let's scale down. I do not believe that the concept design should be changed without taking it back to the public and reopening the questions. I do believe that the letter requesting the Juneau Access Roads for $8 million, I think that was an error in judgment. There's approximately $20 million available. $15 million is the amount the federal government was looking for us for a 40% match. I believe we should have requested the 15 million for our 40% match. I do not believe we've exhausted all the available possibilities with our grant writing, and I would like to see us to pursue that. Before we discuss changing it, I believe we need to reopen the public process. Bonding should be the last conversation we have.
Diana.
I have to echo Brenda. I don't believe all grant funding has been exhausted. To get turned down by one grant does not mean that you go and turn turtle and change the entire design. It has gone through several public processes. It's been approved by the Assembly, and I think we owe it to this community to be turned down on many, 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 many different grant levels. We have an excellent grant writer, Krista, on staff who has garnered a lot of grants for Haines. And I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet and go to a $21 million dolphin idea that's going to hamstring Haines for the next 20, 30, 40 years. Perspective. We all send or try to send our children to college. We want them to be well-rounded individuals, have life experiences, and to be able to go out in the real world and meet life's ups and downs and the realities of life. That's what we need for Haines. Haines needs to progress. We've got to be on the front and center, whether it's shovel ready for projects so that we can accept or get approved by grants, or follow through with as many grant writing ideas as we possibly can, and then come back and maybe downscale. But to just turn around after one grant gets reneged on, I won't settle for that. Not for this community, I won't.
Sean.
Yeah, so those questions respectively, right now I'm leaning towards yes and no. I don't think bonding is a good idea. I think that should be a last resort and a vote of the people. I think we should consider the lower cost of the dock. This public process I've heard through the Port and Harbor Advisory Committee, as the liaison to the committee, their first thing they told me was how they've had over 50 meetings and they're always empty. I've been to a few meetings myself, and it's usually just me and them and maybe one or two other people, and they begged me as the new assembly member to get more input. Most people I've been talking to have been telling me that the LUTAC dock is failing. We need something now. Typically in negotiations, if you aim big and you get shot down, you start working your way down just a little bit. So I think it's an option we should consider. I don't think it's foolish to think that if we get shot down for a grant for an exorbitant amount of money, that we should immediately think that going for a slightly lesser amount is crazy. It's typically how negotiations work. And I actually brought up the idea of the roll-on, roll-off dock at the last assembly meeting. I tried to not bring up any new business unless elected, because I was appointed to this position, but I'm not taking my time where I am for granted. And what concerns me greatly about Haines is the sustainability of the town, and that we don't really have the best sustainable fallback plan if LUTAC dock fails. And the roll-on, roll-off dock is now currently being assessed by engineers to see what kind of shape it's in. My question was, what happens if we don't get the funding and we even go for the lower amount and we're still in the process of getting funding, which takes months to maybe years, who knows, and the roll-on, roll-off dock fails? What do we do then? We have really no way to bring stuff in. Their fallback plans, as Michael said, are completely unsustainable. So I proposed we start thinking about more sustainable options and increasing our local production of goods that we would typically ship from out of state or out of town, or both. And I think it's important to think about why we're here and what our goals were for moving here. Our goals were to come here and be a community and work together and not necessarily need a lot of outside help. So I think that the outside help we're looking for is we need to think about what kind of taxes we pay the state and what we should get back for those taxes we're paying them. As the town of Haines, we don't really have a lot of people to put into a lot of taxes, so asking for a lot of money like that might not be the best tactic. So I figure it's at least worth a shot, and let's see where we go from there. But I don't think bonding is sustainable either, and unless we get a resounding opinion of the people, that should not even way in the future.
Thank you. The Assembly approved a deficit budget that leans on savings for this fiscal year. What revenue generation, such as property or excise taxes or budget cuts, do you support? And we'll start with Andrew.
I know right now we have a very large tax reduction for cruise ships, and it's been very good in the short term in that economically people respond to incentives, and that's brought a whole lot of more cruise ship business to this town. That is one of the things I see that could be slowly and incrementally increased some. I've had all kinds of different conversations with people in different departments or people that have just been here in this town a lot longer than me. And it's amazing, there's so many nickel and dime type things where taxes are discounted or just waived entirely, it seems, in some cases. I know right now the ferries pay next to nothing to dock at our harbor. There's just so many small things like that I would get into once the budget process comes around. And I'd see more cuts than I would increases in taxes if you asked me to balance the budget tomorrow. There's a lot of ideas in that, and that really does depend on how aggressive the manager wants to pursue it. We haven't seen, I look forward to that process, honestly, with Deborah to see how aggressively she wants to pursue the budget.
Just quickly, do you support excise taxes on marijuana and tobacco?
Generally not, no.
Okay. Let's go to Brenda.
The state's financial budget crisis is a reality that we must face. It is affecting our finances as well. The issues of our budget cannot be resolved with a simple across-the-board spending cuts or increasing property taxes. The issue is much more complex than that. There are certain expenditures that we must protect. For example, the school, we must protect our funding that we're providing the school. Public works needs to be protected. Snow plowing needs to be protected. And our infrastructure, we need to maintain it effectively. I believe that the best way and the most legitimate way to raise revenue is by increasing the economy. We have a lot of opportunities in Haines to improve on the manufacturing. There's a lot of manufacturing happening right now in Haines. We've got a brewery, a distillery. People make birch bowls, totem poles. We've got a lot of artworks. And I believe we should be using the Haines Economic Development Corporation to encourage entrepreneurship. I think that the excise tax issue is a complex issue. I think it should be explored further. My memory at the time of the marijuana initiative, when it was being voted on, was that was one of the items that people were saying, that it would be a revenue generation. At the same time, I believe that we, as a community, have accepted the marijuana as part, as a new industry, and I think the industry needs to be allowed to take root without being squashed with a heavy burden of taxation on it. But I do believe there should be an appropriate burden of taxes on it.
Okay, Sean.
Where to begin? Last assembly meeting, I brought up that issue of sustainability, and one of the things I wrote on the letter is how I'd like to discuss possibly cutting a sales tax for locally produced agriculture. I think that'd be a good idea. There's Salt and Soil Marketplace, so people who have their own home gardens could grow and sell their excess to Salt and Soil, so we can basically flood our local food supply with healthy, locally grown organic produce that costs less, because one of the hardest reasons to live here is the food cost. Trust me, it took me 5 years to find a job and a house here, and now I'm here, and I can't realize it's $50 for a brown paper bag of groceries. I would really like to incentivize small business. I think that a smaller local economy is where it is. It's the kind of community we're looking for. We're looking for the artists. We're looking for the craftsmen. We're looking for the people who come here to use the natural resources. I would like to see infrastructure being rebuilt to generate passive revenues through sustainability. I don't think it's a pipe dream anymore. I think it's been tried and tested for enough years that it's just now fact. And there are plenty of government grants. There are plenty of state grants. I thought about maybe a new public facility for a greenhouse that we could give rental subsidies to people who don't know how to garden or don't have the ability to garden, to be able to rent a space that's open 365 days a year to be able to produce more locally grown food. If you talk to anybody who's been here for an extremely long time, my mother-in-law takes care of Hazel. It was just her 101st birthday the other night. She said the reason this town was successful when it first started is because they had a gigantic garden. It was a huge garden over the entire fort front lawn, and they relied on each other before they relied on anything outside of each other. So I strongly believe in sustainability. As far as the excise taxes, I'm for and I'm against. I'm for the tobacco tax. As a former smoker, recently former smoker, we're not a protected class as a landlord. At Dusty Trails, I just recently had to institute a no smoking policy, and smokers are not a protected class, and the pack per cigarette will still be less than that in most places around Haines. And I think that in a fiscal crisis, it's not great, but it's something that will work, and maybe we could talk about lowering it in the future as the assembly is the one who could decide excise tax. As far as excise tax on marijuana, I've always been a strong proponent against it, because not only does it grow the black market, but it also makes it harder for small businesses here to start growing their own. I mean, we had more people in Haines show up just to vote yes on marijuana than people in Juneau showed up total to vote. Like, we voted it for a reason. We should start acting like the way we voted. I've been recently talking to a bunch of different people, the local state assessor for taxes, the federal assessor. I've been talking to the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I've been talking to Skagway. I've been talking to people in Colorado. There are peat rainforest farms in Juneau. And I think the real issue we need to bring up is where we want to tax people. Because in Washington, they have, I think it was a 37% excise tax charged at the consumer level, at the retail level. So when the person bought it, it wasn't an excise tax as the assembly is currently figuring it, which is an export tax, which is basically how we thought. When you ship it out, it's an excise tax. An excise tax.
Okay, Sean, if you could wrap it up, please.
Yes, yes. The excise tax can also be on one specific good, and you can choose where it is. And that's something that we were going to bring up at the next assembly meeting, or I was hoping to bring up at the next assembly meeting. So if you have any questions, ask.
Diana.
I'm sorry, would you mind repeating the question?
Of course. The Assembly approved a deficit budget that leans on savings for this fiscal year. What revenue generation, such as property or excise taxes or budget cuts, do you support?
Oh, my, 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 my. I believe in a priority-based budgeting. That means the taxpayers pay for a service that is the service that the government is responsible for sending back to the taxpayer. Anything other over and above that is what I call the icing on the cake. And many programs that we have in the borough right now were contingent upon how much icing we had on that cake. We're getting less and less every year. The state is coming down with less and less money. Federally, it's coming down with less and less money. So to pinpoint a particular program, because I know they're all near and dear to everyone's heart, and I have nothing against any particular program, but at some point in time, the reality, and reality is such that it's so hard to acknowledge reality, but we are going to have to take cuts, and they may not be good, they may not be pretty, and they're going to hurt somebody somewhere, someplace in time. But if we do it with the mindset that it's for the good of this community in order to provide services that we all pay for, then I think it'll be a lot more palatable.
Michael.
So I'm generally an optimist. And I think with good planning and a sense of community, we can grow ourselves out of this problem. In the short term, I think we're going to have to take a comprehensive approach in looking at all potential sources of revenue. I do, though I recognize it's not necessarily popular, I do believe in the sin taxes. I think it just makes good sense. Contrary to some of the things I've heard earlier tonight, I do think it might give incentive to people to help quit, though that's not really the ultimate goal. I like the idea of looking at other sources of revenue as well. We have a lot of flow-through traffic of cruise ship passengers who are here enjoying our beautiful area and valley partaking in tours and what have you. And we, as I understand it, don't generate any tax revenue from that. But a lot of those taxes are paid in Skagway and those monies stay there. And I'd like to see if we could correct that. I do think we need to create the infrastructure in town for business to grow. And that includes, for instance, the LUTAC dock. So being optimistic and having a sense of force of will, if you will, I think we can do this. But we will also need to cut on frivolous spending. One of the things that stands in my memory is a stark reminder of something I want to change is I was at an assembly meeting where they were talking about adding additional time to the pool schedule. And I would love to have the pool open all the time and have it here for the purposes that we originally intended. That was to make our kids water safe. We don't need to have any more tragedies than absolutely necessary. However, it's not really an appropriate time to be considering spending $7,000 or $10,000 or whatever the number turned out to be to open the pool another day because a small group of people want to use it that day. I think we need to be very careful with how we spend our monies, and I think we need to as the assembly, to shepherd those monies very, very carefully. Thank you.
That was an audience question regarding the pool, and I'll ask the whole question, but this year the assembly added more money in the budget for the pool and library. As brief as possible, do you agree with that choice? We'll start with Diana.
No, I don't. I think the hard line fact of it, we were already in a deficit, and I think by trying to keep the pool open an extra day, or the library has friends at the library. I'm not saying, you know, that they're gonna be the catch-all for the library, but we have to use other ways and means if we wanna keep these facilities operating. To take taxpayer money and to line item it specifically for a facility, I don't agree with, no.
Michael, would you like to address the library?
I'm not gonna anger my wife. She's a library fan. I think we have public resources here that enrich our community, and we need to maintain the quality of life here. And the library is one of those facilities that I think it wins awards every year. The reason it wins awards is because it's supported by our community. So I'm in favor of the library. I think it's a great place for our community to come together. It's a great place for our children to educate themselves and for all the citizens to educate themselves. But that being said, I am not necessarily familiar with the numbers that you bring to bear or the question asks. So I would look at it closely. Thank you.
Sean.
I am a huge fan of both. I feel that if the library or the pool was not around, if you can name a couple other things that kids can do and not be alone in bear country doing, then I'm all ears for that. But the kids in this town have very little to actually do outside of parental supervision. And whether or not you have kids, the library, I think, is definitely needed. It's all about sustainability. It's where we get all of our information from. If there's something that happens and we only have the library as a resource, that is one of our most valuable resources. The health and the activity of our children is also one of our biggest resources. I think the pool is vitally important, not only for our lifestyle, our health, the children. It's also providing jobs. It's also providing, I go to the pool a lot. I have a bunch of kids in the pool, and even if my kids weren't there, I couldn't imagine depriving anybody of that. And there's ways that we can make it work. If we have to rebuild infrastructure to make it more possible for it to pay its own bills through, yet again, sustainability, it's my buzzword, we can make it happen, but priorities are important.
Thank you. Brenda.
I believe that we need to develop policies that encourage our youth. And I think that the two items that you spoke of, the library and the pool, are consistent with that belief system with me. I would, however, want to reach out and see if they can find a way for covering their own expenses. People are usually very happy to pay for services that they use. Sometimes you just need seed money in order to get it going. So I would have to say that I'm pleased that the pool is hours are being expanded, and I certainly enjoy our library. I think it's a tremendous asset for our community.
Andrew.
Yeah, if I had been an assembly, I remember that meeting where the discussion basically came about how the pool essentially loses money when it's open. And in the midst of spending almost $400,000 in deficit, we're going to expand that hours. And yeah, I've got four kids, and they act like Labrador retrievers. They can't stay out of the water if it's around. They love it. They also love the library. But this is exactly one of the sort of things where in the midst of this big of a deficit, I wouldn't have expanded it. Certainly wouldn't have expanded it. This is the kind of thing that it would be very sad if my kids had less available time where they could go to the pool or the library. But in this deficit, in this situation we're at, I think that's one of the tolerable pains we'd have to deal with. So I wouldn't have supported those.
Thank you. What would you need to see in the Haynes Economic Development Corporation proposal to grant them $95,000? And let's start with Brenda.
I love this question because I've got lots of ideas for it. In 2004, the voters approved broadening the tax to include economic development. The funds really haven't been used effectively twice. We've had some short-term economic development directors that did not work out that well. I believe that the funds could be used, and what I'd like to see them used for is to develop entrepreneurship in our community. I've had twice in the last couple weeks people who are in Haynes, they have a business, and they were reaching out to me for assistance with accounting and administrative burdens of their job. They're very effective in what they do, but that's a burden that they have to take on as sole proprietors. I think that this is a role that the Economic Development Corporation could fill. I additionally think that they could be providing some marketing expertise. I would like to see them to offer trainings to people who want to start businesses or who have businesses and bring experts in. We have a whole lot of people in our community that have a lot of expertise that would be willing to share, but do not. And unfortunately, both of those people I had to decline. I don't have the time in order to assist them as much as I have a passion for that. I also believe the Economic Development Corporation would serve a real good benefit to our children to go into the schools and actually teach entrepreneurship. Our children are leaving our towns year after year. As a school board member, I watched them graduate and they left because they had to pursue career opportunities that were not available here. We do have a lot of opportunities where they could start their own businesses, but that's pretty scary and it's outside of the box for most people. So I would like to see the Economic Development Corporation have a program where they teach young people, including school age people, how to go about starting their own business.
Thank you. Andrew.
I'm in general a big fan of what their stated goals and mission is. I agree in a lot of the stuff that they can do. It seems that it's just outside of the realm of where government's kind of role is to spur and stimulate economic growth, and I'm very positive for that. As far as what I would need to see to approve that money, I'm going to steal Sean's buzzword and say sustainability. That's my understanding, is that this is a one-time or close to one-time payment for them to get on their feet and have a serious plan for this being essentially it, and for them being a self-sustaining and propagating organization after that. And that would be the biggest thing. I would really crawl through their plan to try and see that they had a solid plan for doing that, that they're not going to be back the next year saying, oh boy, we forgot and we need another $95,000 to do what we said we were going to do with this $95,000.
Michael.
I'm the father of three kids, two of whom are in college, the others graduated. They're all great kids. I'm terribly proud of them. And they all want to live here. And so what I need to see is a plan based in reality. I think a lot of times you have these plans that are developed in this pie in the sky or these very rosy speculative statements that they ask us to make put our monies behind. And so I have to be honest with you, I'm very skeptical of these organizations just on the face of it. That being said, I have great respect and feel that the business owners and young entrepreneurs that are eager, hopeful business owners have great opportunity here. What I would like to see is a marketing campaign that would encourage other entrepreneurs to come to Haines to develop a sense of growth here, recognizing that we foster business, we're friendly to business, and that we want to encourage people with good ideas to set roots here. This is a fantastic place to build a business. Despite some of the challenges that we face here, there are things that are offered here that are not tangible. And I think we have a real opportunity to grow. Thank you.
Thank you. Diana.
I was just thinking, and I'm listening to all of the comments, and I'm looking out into the audience, and I know we all want the same thing. We want a healthy, diversified economy. And Haynesboro has had, in the past, economic directors that have not, for one reason or the other, it has not worked out well. And because we want all these things, but we don't know how to achieve them. And so we place all our nuts into one basket and say, you go out and you bring us home the trophy. The Economic Development Corporation, I've been behind for the last 2.5 years, from its infancy until now. The people that are behind it are some of the biggest stakeholders in our community, retail-wise. They've grown up here. Many of them have grown up here, gone away to school, have come back, and now they are putting their thoughts and their knowledge to work in Haines, and they're being successful at it. We have people from the distillery, from the brewery, that are also involved, and they are applying their knowledge and their expertise. We have a tremendous, well-rounded group of people that are coming up with a description for a job for the economic director. And I'm being very optimistic and very hopeful, because in the past it has failed. And I see some good things coming out of this for all of the reasons that have been stated up here. We want this and we want that. And I do see this happening, because they're modeling it after some very successful economic corporations out there.
And Sean.
Yes, I think that at a time where we're debating whether $7,000 to keep a pool open, it might not be the best idea to spend $95,000 on a group that's still deciding what their mission statement is. And after talking with a few of them, this isn't my steadfast idea. I just spoke with somebody who didn't allow me use of their name, so I'm not going to give it, just before I got here. And they're going to be spending the bulk of this money on finding an executive director. So the one thing that I would like to see from the HEDC before we should even consider allowing them the money is to meet the executive director. That there's plenty of people in town who can do it, that there's plenty of people in Alaska who can do it, and the closer we can keep it to home, the better. That being said, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing someone in from around Alaska. I'm not from Haines. I came from outside of Alaska. I would love to start a business. I can't afford the rent here. I think that $95,000 could be spent on basic infrastructure to make it generate passive revenue, to lower the rent, to make it easier and more affordable for small businesses to be here. There's moratoriums on sales taxes. There's the idea, there's tons of ideas that we can do. I don't think we have to spend all of our money to come up with an idea. We just need to maybe have more open meetings where people in town can give their ideas and we could decide on that. That being said, after speaking with someone from the HEDC, I like the idea of the checks and balances with the government. If they really get everything typed down and it's cut and dry and they have an actual plan and we really, really like the person that they want to hire and it seems like a good fit, I'm not 100% opposed to it. But at this point, without further knowledge, I would like to spend the money on things that are actually proven.
Okay, thank you. Can you give a specific example of something that's happened in the past year that's caused you to change your mind on an issue of local significance? And we'll start with Andrew.
Well, being new here, I still am just nonstop learning. And that happens to me on a nearly daily basis. Working on the harbor this summer, I feel like I was able to really, so many people came down and talked to me while I was sitting there doing monitoring and inspection work on the harbor that it helped me. I felt like I really, that changed my viewpoint on how the town felt about the project, honestly. Because I was relatively new and there was all the hubbub and kerfuffle about do we go ahead with this and all that. And that was a really neat opportunity. Even had assembly members come down and meet me there and talk to that. And that's one way in which I was able to just sit and actually passively listen and meet people and hear. And I genuinely came away feeling like I, in a lot of ways, better knew about how the town felt about the harbor. And that was a good learning experience, and I liked it, honestly. As an assembly member, that would be my never-ending mission, would be to listen and hear what people have to say about the issues I'm going to vote on or even have voted on. That's one example.
Diana.
I didn't get the last. Was it a project that changed my mind? Could you repeat
that? Just an issue of local significance.
An issue of vote?
Local significance.
Oh, an issue of local significance. I'm happy. I would have to agree about the harbor. We went through some very tough public meetings, and I know that people took the harbor personally. They were in a crisis mode as far as thinking how this harbor was going to look. And I truly, I voted for the harbor and I remained steadfast on my vote for the harbor when I sat on the assembly. There is a real need for our fishermen to have a harbor that we're putting in right now. I was intrigued when I saw the public meetings about the trail, how people were coming together and conversing over what was the start of a very contentious issue as the boat harbor, and now we're talking about a trail. That is actually a nice trail. It's very, very nice. How we're going to pay for that is going to be the next step. But the ideas and the talking and the working, the collaborating, the getting along, that was refreshing, very refreshing.
Sean.
So I mentioned one earlier about the police service area, but there's really a ton. I can't really narrow it down. I crave input. My grandfather always used to say, I'm never wrong for long, that I can only make the best decisions with the best information I have at the time the decision is to be made. I'm not afraid to change my mind based on the facts. I desperately want you to talk to me and let me know. As your representative, the only way I will know how to make the best decision is through your input. That's why I hand out my phone number and my email and Facebook like candy. I want everyone to be able to contact me whenever they can. The worst thing that I'll say is, I'm busy right now, I'll call you back at blank. You should always be willing to change your mind based on the facts presented to you. And that's, I think, the most important part about being a representative. So I welcome that and I crave it. Thank you.
Michael.
If you could do me the favor and rephrase the question.
Rephrase it or ask
or
it again?
Restate it.
Okay. Can you give a specific example of something that's happened in the past year that's caused you to change your mind on an issue of local significance?
Yeah, I think I can. So when this Tier 3 question arose. I was, I'm an environmentalist. I feel very strongly that we need to maintain and protect our environment. However, I thought, Jesus, Tier 3 sounds really draconian. And that we maybe, that might be a little bit too far. And then I started educating myself. I was looking into the issues. And then I heard of some of the arguments that are the proponents of maintaining a lesser water quality are making that I think are fear-mongering, frankly. And no consideration was made as to the potential economic consequence of a Tier 3 designation. That being said, I'm not sure how much say we have in the matter, but I think just as a matter of principle, the Tier 3 issue was, for me, pardon the phrase, a watershed. And I think it's important that we recognize that all those small business owners that are fishermen out there that are need those fish, healthy, vibrant fish populations, and we need to protect that, and we need to take that very, very seriously. Thank you.
And Brenda.
At the August Planning Commission meeting, we heard a violation on a permit, a conditional use permit, a vacation rental. We heard presentations from the staff, from the permit holder, and from the public, and we found the permit holder not to be in violation. Prior to, just before, it was actually the day of the September Planning Commission meeting, we received some communication from a community member, information that we did not have available to us at the time. And we actually made a vote. Actually, the vote at the August Planning Commission meeting was 5-1. I was in the majority. I voted to not find them in violation. And in August, in September, at our last Planning Commission meeting, we reconsidered that vote, and I actually made the motion for the reconsideration. And we're going to be hearing it further in October.
All right. This is a question for Michael, Sean, and Andrew. This is your first time running for elected office in Haines. How do you plan to educate and inform yourself so that you're prepared if elected? And we'll start with Andrew.
Well, I've been going to assembly meetings from very soon after I arrived in town. I found that to be really informational, educational, just about the town in general, what the issues were that were boiling on it and what was going on. As far as continuing education, I work for a small business that works for a lot of you, so that's always something that keeps me nonstop aware of what's going on in town, particularly in construction and industry. We're an engineering company that serves both private residents and some of the bigger players in town, and that's, again, provided a lot of avenues for me to just meet people, hear of stuff, to see if land transactions and what's going on. Even my job itself does keep me in the Haynesboro code quite a bit, which is helpful. But above all, it's having an attitude that's open to the people. I plan to have, if I'm an assembly person, I would like to have the equivalent of office hours the day before every single assembly meeting where I'm going to vote, so that I could hear, or anyone can email me on the agenda and tell me what they think. I really think it comes down to an attitude of wanting to hear what the people think. I fully plan to embrace that if I am an assembly member.
Michael?
I think the borough staff does a fantastic job of putting together packets. I'd love to see a requirement that actually everyone dig into those and read them. I think these meetings are ridiculously long. And one of the reasons is the assembly members have not formed an opinion coming into the meeting. That's not to say they've decided. It's that they haven't educated themselves to the point where they are able to talk to the issue without being educated. So I think it's critically important that as an assembly member that you come prepared to discuss issues that will be before you in an informed way. I also love to communicate with people. I really enjoy just day-to-day discourse with anyone who cares to talk to me. So I will educate myself by reading these packets, by informing myself as to the details of the decision before us, and just investing myself and being prepared. Thank you.
Sean?
Yeah, the packet is very, very important. I agree. It should be mandatory to read the packet. I think that if you have questions, you should utilize the borough office. If you ask anybody in the borough office that, I mean, I've only been in office for a few months, and I've already showed up at the borough admin building more often than most assembly members, and I'm proud of that because they do have a wealth of knowledge. I mean, I reach out to everybody I can. I do a lot of independent research. I'm an introverted extrovert. I'm not really comfortable going up to people I don't know and saying, hi, my name is Sean, how are you? But if you strike up a conversation, you're gonna have to tell me when to leave you alone, because I get passionate about things that we are talking about. I can't help it. I strongly urge everybody to let me feel comfortable letting me know what you feel. Don't be afraid to tell me right after this meeting, hey, Sean, you said something I didn't agree with. You kind of came off like a jerk, and just let me know, or else how am I gonna know? I'm desperate for the information because I have a huge stake in this town. I'm gonna die here. My kids are gonna consider our land we build out Mosquito Lake home base, and I want them to come back here whenever they feel like being back home, because that's what this is. I need you to help me be your representative, because it's not just the will of the people that I represent. I'm also one of the people, and I'm willing to do what's best for all of us. I just need you to help me figure that out, please.
Okay, we're running short on time, so we're gonna give each of you an opportunity to make a closing statement, but then we're gonna have one last question, and it should just be one or two words as an answer. What is the last book you read? Diana.
The last book I read, holy cow. You know, I have so much time I've been putting into so many other things, and reading has been kind of low on my priority list. I honestly can't answer that. I can't remember. It's been so, and it may not be that long ago. I can't remember.
Yeah. Andrew?
In light of all that went on with this election cycle, I just got back from a moose hunting trip, drove far up north. I got 1984 by George Orwell on audiobook, and I listened to that on my way up and back down, and it was delightfully, chillingly, the man was a visionary.
Michael?
I'm presently reading The Long Walk.
Brenda.
I actually just recently reread Animal Farm.
Sean.
Any nerdy fantasy magic distraction that I can, because most of the time I spend reading, it's on articles and research, so sometimes I just need a break. I think the last one I read was the newest one by Jim Butcher in the Dresden series. Super awesome.
All right, please make a brief closing statement if you have any final thoughts. We'll start with Sean.
I'll leave mine really quick. My phone number is 957-6453. My last name is Maidy, M-A-I-D-Y, like a maid that cleans your house, the Y at the end, like, why are you in my house? If you want to send me an email, mailmaidy@gmail.com. I also have a borough. I mean, just call me, please. Let me know what's going on so I can help make the best decisions for all of us. Thank you very much.
Diana.
I was on the assembly for 3 years. I've had a year off. I have not been idle, and I want to work for you.
Brenda.
I was at a meeting this spring where our governor made the statement that Alaska is suffering from a death of common sense. And I hope that's not true. Common sense might be on life support, but I don't believe it's dead. I believe that I've worked with many people on many sides of issues, and I believe with the right leadership, we can come together on the majority of our issues, because we are on the majority, we feel the same, and we need to concentrate on that. We need to restore common sense back to local government.
Michael.
Yeah, I would say I'm an optimist. I'm a problem solver. I'm a finder of solutions, and I know we can make this community better than it is today, and I'm asking for your support.
And Andrew.
Boy, am I good at this. But I enjoy you. I've enjoyed this town tremendously since moving here. And every day I do spend here, I feel more certain that I'm going to stay the rest of my days here. And yeah, I feel like we've got some big problems on the docket this coming year, but they're not problems that we can't overcome. I think it's smaller and less than what we dealt with in times before, when I was young, other oil crashes and tough economic times in Alaska. We've weathered through this. And even divisive political times. I think the problems are not too big to overcome, and I'd be privileged to be an assembly member helping us navigate through it.
Okay, thank you. That's all the time we have. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks, everyone, who submitted questions for candidates. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but we appreciate that you did.